Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning. I'm Chris Farrell, filling in for Carrie Miller. Later this hour, we're going to take a look into the Foxconn deal in Wisconsin. But first, we're going to follow up on the Thurman Blevins case. He was fatally shot by police in North Minneapolis on June 23rd. The city of Minneapolis released the police body camera footage of that encounter, and Hennepin County Attorney General Mike Freeman has said he won't prosecute the officers. Joining me in studio is President of the Minneapolis NAACP, Leslie Badeau. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you for having me today, Chris.
And Jeffrey Agee is Vice President of the NAACP Minneapolis.
Thank you for having us, Chris.
Thank you. So for those of you listening, I want to hear from you. What do people need to understand about the police shooting of Thurman Blevins and the actions the city of Minneapolis has taken since that incident? Please call us at 651-227-6000, toll-free 1-800-242-2828. Leslie, I imagine you've seen the video footage.
I have.
And what was your reaction?
It was heartbreaking, to be honest. It's extremely difficult to digest. I don't think people take into consideration the severity and how heart-wrenching it is to see yet another Black man killed by police officers in cold blood. Right. I have a husband. I have a father. I have hopefully children one day, brothers. Like, I see them when I see Thurman, when I see Jamar, when I see Philando. And so it was very disturbing. And I live in North Minneapolis, so it was extremely disturbing.
And Jeffrey, the reaction in the community.
I think we have a community that's just really fed up, fed up with failed policies, fed up with wondering and asking. I know Leslie and I, and even for us in the leadership position, just people asking us, what can we do?
Yeah.
And it feels as though, and I'm still, as you can probably hear in my voice, I'm still processing it emotionally, because it feels as though we're doing everything we can and nothing's changing. And so what do you tell a community that feels like they have no option and no voice and no way to affect the change that they're looking for?
So what do you want people to understand about how the city of Minneapolis is handling this situation?
I think it was very unique that it took this long to release the video. It makes you wonder, why did it take so long? When you think about how Kral talked about how this act was heroic, seeing the video, you know, seeing a man, seeing there was no plan for de-escalation while these officers were driving, seeing how as soon as they pulled up, it was, I'm going to effing shoot you. Seeing all these things and still viewing that act as heroic, and then taking so long to release the video, and for County Attorney Mike Freeman to just tell us that, hey, we're not prosecuting. Like, why did it take so long for you to make that decision?
And if I could just add on, what I want the community to know is that this is not new. Right. So when we think about lynchings, these are lynchings just using a firearm, and it's very problematic. And I want Minnesotans to recognize that we are writing our history right now, and we have a moment to figure out, what do we want our legacy to be? What do we want to pass on to our children? A lot of people like to talk about, I had nothing to do with slavery, right? Like, those might be my ancestors, but I can't be penalized for it. And I agree to a certain extent. However, similar to the enslavement of Africans in America, one that was legal. So a lot of people like to justify what happens on a legal basis, but there's a distinction between law and ethics. Just because something is legal does not mean that it is morally right. And what I'm asking for us is to have our morals guide our laws, not our laws to guide our morals.
And guide our discussion.
Exactly. And look at this situation with your heart. You know, look at it as if it was your son. Look at it as if it was your husband, right? See the humanity, because historically we have dehumanized Black people in America. And when you dehumanize and make somebody the other, it removes the compassion in your heart, right?
Yeah. And so I want to play, we had yesterday, we had a former police officer and psychologist, Dr. Ginger Charles, and she was on the show, and she had watched the video, and we asked her to analyze the footage for us.
Okay.
And so I want to play a clip here. And what I asked her was whether she saw, because Jeffrey, you'd raised this issue about to de-escalate. And so I asked her, you know, whether she saw an opportunity to de-escalate the situation. So, and then I'd like to, I'm going to play what she says and then get your reaction.
Okay.
It is such an immediate reaction that you have a man with a gun who's been reported to shoot. You see that man with a gun and he takes off. At that particular time, if the officers made the decision to stop chase, you have a man with a gun who is reported as intoxicated, reported to have shot. Really, that's not acceptable for a police officer. So that's unfortunate, but that's the situation that is presented to them. You know, there isn't a period of time where they could actually slow down. Now, had he gone around a corner, then I would have expected the officer to slow down and stop and then evaluate where he went. But it is in full chase, and there's really not any opportunity in order to think about how do we de-escalate this.
So, Leslie?
Okay, I want to start by saying
I'm
not anti-police, right? I have a number of people in my family who have been on the police force and are on a police force, grandfather served in the military, all of that, right? So this is not an anti-police conversation, right?
No.
So I just want that to be clear because I do respect that people are putting their lives on the line, right? But we have to look at the foundation of even policing, right? Like it started off as slave catching, right? And so when I see those police officers running after him, they were, it's like it was a hunt. Like, that's what it really looked like. And again, it's horrifying to live in America under those circumstances. The situation is that he was shooting, but he wasn't shooting. First of all, if he was a suspect, right? We don't even know if he was the person that they were actually looking for. But right. Had he been, the report said that he was shooting at the ground and at the sky. Not that he was a threat to human beings and that he was shooting at a person, right? In addition to that, we have to really evaluate. If he was a white person, that probably wouldn't have happened. They would have found a way to de-escalate it because we value white lives in America. White lives matter in America.
Jeffrey?
I think it's kind of ironic that she came to that conclusion when as soon as the police officers pulled up, they said, put your hands up or I'm going to effing shoot you. So it's ironic that mm-hmm. they had an opportunity to threaten him and to tell him, we're going to effing shoot you. But didn't have an opportunity to say, hey, we received a call. What's going on with you? Because he was sitting down with a child and a mm-hmm, woman there.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that the analysis very ironic that the analysis begins at the chase. It begins at the chase. It was as if you heard the recording played and you didn't see the video, you would believe that the officers jumped out of their car in mid-chase with someone that was already running.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't address the fact that they pulled up with the intention to neutralize a suspect.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't about public safety of the child or of the mother, nor about the public safety of that particular person. And so in many cases, the reaction of police when it comes to black men or reports of people that are black is not to protect or serve,
mm-hmm.
but to neutralize. And you look at Dylann Roof, who killed 9 or 11 people.
Right.
And you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that this person mm-hmm. is armed, dangerous,
mm-hmm.
and coming in is to how can we de-escalate this situation? And so when it comes to our community, the thought process is never de-escalation. And
right.
perhaps as a former police officer, and I think a psychologist, perhaps she, I don't know the gender pronoun, but I'm just going to assume she is saying that from her training, and from the things that she's learned from her training, whether experience or what she's learned from her institutions of higher learning, is that when you do pull up on the scene, a police officer should have the right to do what they did. That's what I get from her statement.
Okay. I want to go to the phones. And Mitch is in Rochester. Mitch?
Hello?
Yes, Mitch. Thanks for joining us. What is your comment?
Well, you know, and I've been listening to this comment, and I saw the video, and I was very suspicious before I saw the video. I got to tell you, and I think, you know, as far as some of the things that have happened, I believe that black men certainly are not treated fairly and the other biases.
Yeah,
but I got to tell you, I found no problem with these officers not being charged. Listen, why do you have a gun? You know, if you have a permit to carry it, then show it. Why did you take off running? You know, if you're going to be intoxicated or whatever, you're going to be out shooting or whatever. But really, all he had to do was stop. Stop, put his hands up, do whatever. But if you take off running, especially if you're shooting backwards or shooting at the ground or whatever, and you know, we say this right now, well, why didn't they do this? Well, Now, what if this guy had went ahead and shot somebody up? Then they would have said, well, why didn't the cops stop it? So, right. Hey, I don't fault the cops in this one. There's a lot of responsibility we have to take ourselves. Don't be out with a gun shooting or whatever. It's just crazy. I don't blame the cops in this instance.
All right. Thank you. Leslie?
How you doing, Mitch? This is Leslie. You know, unlike Thurman, or unlike the police in the situation with Thurman, I see a humanity. And I want you to know that we have to stop saying but. We have to stop justifying the killings of human beings. I want you to recognize that Thurman was a human being. You say if you have a permit, show it. They never asked for a permit. They never asked his name. They didn't ask for anything. But they were ready to shoot and fire. And I need you to see his humanity in this situation. D.L. Hughley once said, the worst place for black people to live is in white people's imagination. I need you all to stop imagining that black people are a threat, even when they aren't.
So let's go to Shelley. And Shelley, you're in Maplewood. Shelley?
Hi.
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 What's your comment?
I wanted to say what I took away from the video is the officers exited the vehicle, not in a de-escalating manner, but in an escalating manner. Blevins did the American math in his mind. He added it up. Black man with a gun equals dead black man. He tried running. He denied he had done anything wrong. He denied he was a black man with a gun. He looked over his shoulder to see if they were gaining on him. He begged, please don't shoot me. Then he turned, and he was dead. I think if they had learned a language to speak to a young black man the way young black men speak to each other, and that would have de-escalated the situation.
So, Jeffrey, you're nodding while she was speaking.
I mean, I agree with her 100%, and I find it very ironic that the previous caller stated that, you know, he saw nothing wrong with what the police officers did. And it always goes back to the legality of the issue. And we're talking about the morality of the issue, right? The legality is pretty much police officers have the right for open season to kill people. In Florida, regular citizens, for fear of their life, have open season to kill people. And we know statistically and research shows that there's an inherent fear of black men. So from a legal justification perspective, yeah, I could agree with the caller. Yeah, there's a legal precedence for that. However, I'm agreeing with, I was nodding my head totally with hers because they never came in with the intention to de-escalate. And it's always hilarious. And when I say hilarious, not like in the ha 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 funny, but in an ironic way, how we ask, oh, what is he doing with the gun? We would never ask a white person what they're doing with the gun. Oh, what was he doing shooting in the air? Or what was, you don't even know if that's actually the suspect. And you see a number of assumptions made because that's his inherent view of the call. Like the caller still didn't know whether that was the suspect. The caller doesn't know that, but made the assumption, well, that was the suspect. He was shooting in the air. He was shooting in the ground. He had no business doing it. This and that, this and that. And it's always placed on the person who can't speak for themselves. And so I'm nodding my head because the reality is, the situation, they did not come in to de-escalate the situation. That's a fact.
So, Leslie, there's a protest this afternoon.
Yes.
And so what do you want to come out of this protest? What do you want people to take away from this protest? And
so I think the argument continues to be that black lives will matter, right, to all human beings, because I fully believe that we are the human race before we're any other race. And I think it's about people seeing our humanity. And again, the distinction between what is legal and what is moral. I agree with Jeffrey earlier, as I stated, because we have to recognize that the laws, the way that they're currently set up, they were written majority by white men and for white men, and they continue to perpetuate the oppression of black communities. And so I think we need to, one, fight for policy changes. We need to get new people in office who are going to prosecute and recognize, one, that we need to change the law. We need to make sure that where discretion can be dangerous, and in these cases, it can be deadly. And so making sure we're using discretion properly, and also just we need to change the system, because the whole system is guilty. The whole system is perpetuating injustice and oppression. And so we need to rewrite the policies, the laws, and also have the courage to see the humanity in black people.
So Jeffrey, last question. What comes next? What would you like to see come next?
I would like to see, I'm from the Christian, let me answer it this way.
Sure.
My background is in the Christian faith. And in the Bible, God himself says that basically he can't work with someone who's blind and doesn't see that they're blind. Pride is a very real thing. The greatest issue in this is most policymakers and most callers are like our first caller who doesn't see a problem. And so empathy would be the most important thing that we need, because empathy allows a lens to be seen that there's an actual real problem. Leslie and I have been working hard on policy and all these different things that we're supposed to work on, that's what we would like to see next. But the biggest issue and the barrier is most of the people that are in the positions to make the policy does not see a problem with the current system. They see a problem with the victims. And so if you have policymakers and leaders who their issue is not with the policy, but with the people, you will continue to have groups like us fight to make a change and it doesn't happen. Lastly, I would like to say the reason why there's a protest is because protests oftentimes are the only means and methods that people could be heard. Like, my car got blown up last year. Okay. Do you think we want to do this? Like, a lot of people like act like we want to do this. Like, NAACP is what we do in addition to our other jobs. Like, right. Nobody wants to do this. Nobody wants to protest. Nobody wants to put their life on the line. And so for me, I would like people to know that this isn't a publicity stunt. People don't go on because they want to be on TV or the news. The reality is that is the only method we have to be heard. And what my real fear is, is when that method seems to continue to fail, what do you ask a people to do when they feel that they have no other option? That is a real fear that
their voice is not
about.
Being heard.
That, exactly. Right. That is a and that's the only way their voice is being heard. And then their voice is not being heard. That's a real fear people should really worry about, because as leaders of quote unquote leaders of the Black community, I see myself as a member of the Black community, not as a leader, but as quote unquote leaders of the Black community, I'm getting to be more and more difficult to find answers for people.
Right.
Because
right.
We've tried every method.
And can I just add on that?
Please.
It wouldn't matter if he had a gun or not, right? And we saw it. That didn't save Jamar Clark. Jamar Clark was on the ground with one arm behind his back, and that didn't save him from the police. In addition, I want us to recognize that this is not just about being symbolic. Thurman Blevins was a person. He had three daughters. He has a family. He has loved ones that is left behind. He has a community that is hurting and grieving. And so, again, I just ask people to see our humanity, see Thurman's humanity, and don't just look at this from a legal lens, but look at this from a human lens.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate your taking your time. And Leslie Badeau is president of the Minneapolis NAACP. Jeff Yeagy is vice president of the Minneapolis NAACP.
Thanks so much for having us.
Well, thank you.